This episode of We Are Libertarians is brought to you by Audible.com. Enjoy one free audiobook courtesy of We Are Libertarians. Choose from more than 100,000 audiobook titles, including works by Ron Paul, Walter Block, Murray Rothbard, and the Cato Institute. Audible.com also has audio of radio and TV programs and audio versions of magazines and newspapers. You can get the Audible app on any mobile device or download the audio to your computer. Go to audibletrial.com/WAL or head to WeAreLibertarians.com and find the link to get one free month of Audible today. Welcome to We Are Libertarians for this week. I am your host, Chris Spangle, and to my right, for the first time ever to my right, Gina Martinez.
I am right-winged today.
No. Wah-ha-ha. You've switched places with Greg, and Greg is now to your right, which he always was. Greg, how are you doing?
I am doing well. How are you, Chris?
And then to my left, Harry Price, everybody.
Woo! Round of applause.
Yes.
Yeah, hey, everybody.
Long-time listener, first-time guest on the podcast, and you have your own podcast. What is it?
That's correct. I am 50% of the Independence Bell podcast.
Okay. What do you guys talk about there?
Let's see. We consider ourselves the far right show in the Indiana Talks. we usually talk about general news and different stuff that like interest us through the comes up through the week.
Okay, so similar to what we do. So if you like this program, there's a good chance you'll like the Independence Bell. You can find it on iTunes, I'm sure, and many other places. So you got a website?
Correct. IndependenceBell.com. You can also find it on Twitter, IndieBellUSA.
Okay. So there are many new listeners. We want to thank Tom Woods. Tom did an interview with us probably about a month ago and took that interview and put it into his podcast feed, which has tens and tens of listeners more than this podcast. Many, many more. So
it has 30.
Right, yeah. No, it at one point was like number one in news and politics on the iTunes listings.
That's
it was awesome. In the top 20 of podcasts. So it may still be. I'm not quite sure. But when it premiered, it really blew up. And so it is a great honor for us to have our humble little podcast put into his feed. And so we have a lot of new listeners. And for the first time, we will be broadcast on LRN.FM, which is out of New Hampshire and run by the guys who do Free Talk Live. So Ian Freeman heard us on the Tom Woods podcast and added us to his lineup. So
thank you, Tom.
Yeah, so Tom doing us a big favor. Thanks to Ian as well. So there are many new people listening to the podcast. So let us give you a little bit of background. Longtime listeners will know most of this information, but we want to make sure that if you're joining us for the first time, you have a little bit of background of who we are. We started back in March of 2012, and just to generally talk about the events of the week, you know, we have a different philosophy or different MO than a lot of other shows, especially on LRN.FM. Which is a great podcast / radio streaming network of libertarian podcasts. But a lot of shows on there take the anarchist point of view and talk a lot about philosophy. We try to struggle with current events and applying libertarian thought to them. And that can sometimes be difficult because there's, you know, other than some of the polls and some other folks, there aren't a lot of libertarian activities taking place in current events these days. So we have grown over the course of time and have become a growing cast of characters. Chris Galtz and Creighton Harrington, who started the podcast with myself. Chris is no longer with us.
He's not dead, though.
No, he's not dead. He's very much alive. And Creighton Harrington.
Chris.
What?
We talk about him so poorly on this podcast.
No,
the kid invested so much.
I still love Chris.
Okay.
I don't know if he still loves me. So Creighton,
Chris, we got love for you.
So Creighton used to be on pretty regularly, but he took a job out with Young Americans for Liberty and now lives in Washington, D.C. and has caught the Potomac fever. And he works late, so most of the time he is not able to join us and hasn't been on in a while, but being near Christmas, Creighton will return to Indianapolis, Indiana, where we broadcast out of in 14 hours. And then next week, we will have Creighton on the podcast. So all those who share rand boners with Creighton Harrington, you will get your dose of libertarian republicanism from Creighton. We have a broad cast of characters. So since then, we added Greg to the podcast, who's a recovering Republican, still probably votes Republican more often than not, but has definitely become more and more libertarian over the course of the last year.
I'm a libertarian in theory, absolutely.
Though. Right. And so I'll start with myself, and then we'll kind of go down the line, just talking about how we developed our philosophy. But we try to have a broad spectrum of libertarianism. We don't believe that there's just one single right view. I think most libertarians struggle with how to apply libertarian principles and the non-aggression principle to current events, to their beliefs on certain topics and issues. And we very much struggle with a lot of that, too, and we broadcast it. And, you know, as opposed to telling you exactly what you ought to think, we try to present multiple points of view and let you pick and choose and think about various issues. And in that way, we're different than a lot of libertarian programs because we're not telling you what libertarians believe. You're kind of hearing us work it out as we go along, which often gets us in trouble, Greg.
Yeah, I'm going to be hated on this new network.
Yeah. and not with us today is Maya Axton, who will be beloved to most of the LRN crowd. Yeah, so check out Maya, M-I-A-H, Axton, A-K-S-T-O-N, on Facebook and Twitter. So she's our resident anarchist when she is not mad at us. So,
which is at least once or twice a year.
Once or twice a month. I'm Chris Spangle. We started this podcast back when I was the executive director of the Libertarian Party of Indiana. And I served there for 4 years from the 08 election to the 2012 election and really, really enjoyed that experience and that job and met a lot of the people who made a lot of this possible. And then went on to work for the Advocates for Self-Government through an ad agency and have spent the last year working as essentially one of the marketing directors for the Advocates for Self-Government, which are the world's smallest political quiz people. Find them on Facebook, like them. And then I just recently left there, like 2 weeks ago, to take a job as the web director for the Bob and Tom Show, which is a nationally syndicated radio show out of Indianapolis. So check that out, too. And my philosophy, I'm fascinated by the anarchist and the anarcho-capitalist point of view and the application of government. When I hear people like Jeffrey Tucker talk about it, it makes total sense to me. But when I often get into discussions with anarchists about the functionality, how do you have an anarcho-capitalist world without a government developing again, I just run into a lot of questions and really kind of struggle with that. So I would say that I want as little government as possible, and I would love for an anarcho-capitalist society to exist, but I think that a minarchist government, essentially in the form of the constitutional republic that was set up in America, is probably the closest that we could get to heaven here on Earth. But I'm always testing those theories, trying to become more anarchist, because I believe in the non-aggression principle, and I would like to have a 100% application of that. But I think it has to make sense and it has to stick. So that's a little bit about my philosophy. I'm a former Republican, but those days are so long gone, it's not even funny. I haven't been a Republican in many, many years. But that is unlike our next guest, our next victim slash co-host.
Yes, yes.
Gina Martinez. Why don't you tell us a little bit about how you came to libertarianism and where do you find yourself philosophically now?
It's such a vague question. Who I am, where I come from, or how I came to libertarianism?
What was your political What is your political background, and what is, you know, how would you identify yourself politically?
I was raised by some pretty staunch Republicans who had some really awesome ideas and very outspoken viewpoints, but I was always taught to think for myself, so I did. I definitely have a lot of Republican friends, believe it or not. There are some valid viewpoints within the Republican Party. I just see all of the bickering and the stagnant state of Congress right now and the way that the Republicans and the Democrats are not functioning together as a cohesive unit, and that's where I see room for the Libertarian Party to emerge.
And you've run for office as a Libertarian before.
I have.
How did that happen?
I stumbled into it. I saw Rupert. I liked his ideas. I thought he was a good person, a good human being with good intentions.
Rupert Bonham from Survivor, who ran here in Indiana for governor in 2012.
So I went to a fundraiser event at the headquarters, and I ran into a cast of bears, as it were. And from there, I went to a party meeting. Someone suggested that I run, and from there, I just went with it.
And what did you run for, and how was that experience?
I ran for state senate. The experience was priceless. And to be honest with you, I accomplished what I set out to do, which was to run for office. And I ended up, as circumstances would have it, running for office with damn near no money while I was pregnant. So if anything, that was an accomplishment, a feat, I guess, that not many people can say that they've done. So
quite a bit of support too.
Oh yeah, I definitely had support of a lot of friends. I had a hard time getting a street crew to go. Like at one point, I think Wes Bishop and I tried to get together a team to go knock door to door, and we were the only two that showed up to our meeting. But other than that, we had a tremendous amount of support from the party and other individuals outside of the party who just had I don't know. Do you say had faith or? Or supported us. We're
yeah,
going to support us.
Support. Yeah. And so one thing you'll find here on our podcast that is different than a lot of other shows is we talk about how to run for office, how to be politically active, and talk about some of the systems, the machinations of running for office. Just because of my background of training candidates and your background as a candidate, and Joe Ruiz is one of our cast of characters. He's the managing editor of our website, wearelibertarians.com. He ran for Congress. So did you like how I slipped that little plug in there?
Well done.
Thank you.
He is our show's official legal alien.
But is it safe to say, Gina, that you look at things more from a left point of view than maybe Greg on the right there next to you?
I think a lot of people assume that. Just based upon my people-oriented philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a lot of things which I'm a lot less vocal on where I have common ground with the Republican Party.
Right. Sure. All right. So Greg Lenz, our scumbag Republican here on the show.
Yep.
Although it is kind of funny because in the beginning, Creighton was anarcho-capitalist. You were a scumbag Republican. And over time, over the last year, that's kind of flipped a little bit. Now he's more scumbag Republican-y than you are.
He out-Republicaned
you.
Oh.
Greg is probably, I would say, a little more hawkish on some foreign policy issues. Certainly not like, let's invade, you know, foreign countries or any of that kind of stuff. But
no, I follow the non-aggression principle till I get hit.
Right, and then you want to destroy people.
Yep.
So a lot of
he's a civilization ender,
right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that often gets you hate mail from a lot of our audience.
It does, but you know, I mean, I won't do anything to you,
right?
Leave me alone. I'll leave you alone. We'll go on our merry way.
Yeah. So
exactly, it works.
How did you get involved in politics, and what would you say your philosophy is?
Well, really, I wasn't really involved much. I mean, so I had a blog called The Lenz Review where I did daily news, and then Spangle was looking for content for We Are Libertarians. And we went to high school and church together growing up, and he just was like, hey, we need content. Would you mind reposting it here? And then it turned into, you want to just come sit in on a podcast, and never left.
Yeah, you have not – I don't think you've missed an episode.
I think I had to miss one. I had to be on Arizona, yeah.
So I call you Mr. Reliable.
Yeah, much to the chagrin of all of our listeners, I'm sure. I am the I'm the one deterring us from growing exponentially, but I'm quite frankly, in theory, yeah, I'm a voluntarist, but I don't really believe that's possible. I just haven't seen it.
Sure.
Where my interests are in solutions. I'm a solution-oriented person. So for me, it's about winning and growing libertarian thought, especially within the political realm. So I'm going to propose solutions that are going to be statist. They're going to make people mad. I'm very much an incrementalist because I guess you could say, like, I'm the Al Davis of liberty. It's just win, baby. just win. But that's really where my focus is. I really like policy. I think that the easiest thing to call me would be like a constitutional minarchist.
Right. So you and I have a very similar view. We have anarchists. Actually, Maya is a voluntarist, so she calls everyone else on the podcast a statist, even the other anarchist, Daniel Peffers.
Because he's an anarcho-capitalist, and capitalism shouldn't be forced on anyone.
Right. If you're new to the show, listen, you're going to love Maya. Our audience has a love-hate relationship with Maya. There is no in-between. You either love Maya or you hate Maya. I love Maya, and I often hate Maya, too. So,
yeah. I started listening because of Maya. I like Maya. She really got me motivated, got me out of my basement. So.
Right, yeah. Maya is one of those people. There are a lot of people in the libertarian movement like her where they're that obstinate rock, and they are constantly sharpening you and making you think and pushing you further until you just you go, I just can't argue with you. You're right. I get it. So it's safe to say that you should go back and listen to several of the Maya episodes. Also on the podcast frequently are Chris and Dan Peffers, two bearded men of liberty.
Scallywags.
Scallywags. And so they should be back next week. They just had a conflicting issue this week, and we've got Harry here, so I said six is a little much on a podcast. So, Harry, why don't you tell us a little bit about your philosophy and from whence you come?
Okay. Well, I came from a really like huge leftist family. All my family are huge Democrats. A lot of the money in my family got thrown to the Obama campaign. Sorry. But
hey, don't apologize. I knocked on doors for Obama. I had a gun drawn on me for Obama.
You yelled at the campaign manager. You've been to the White House.
Yes, but before that, I knocked on doors throughout Bartholomew County and had a gun drawn on me for going around and trying to do door-to-door for Barack Obama.
Because he was a Democrat?
I did not get that far.
Okay.
I knocked on the door and I said, you know, I'm here representing the Barack Obama campaign. Old man came out with a rifle. And it was like, hi there, old man.
Well, he probably thought you were part of his core to take away guns.
Right.
Perhaps. I'm not sure.
I'm sorry. Gina's like 4 foot four.
Right.
Four foot four. I don't think you're taking anything from anyone.
Do you know what really disturbed me about it?
Unless it's on a low shelf.
Exactly. What really disturbed me about it is I could see this man's grandchild in the window and he was of mixed heritage.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was visible to me that this kid came from a diverse background, and his granddad is sitting there with a gun pointed at me because I was knocking on doors for the Democratic Party.
Nice.
So, I can feel you.
Yeah.
You don't have to apologize.
Well, like, and then when I got out of, and I went to public school, the public school system here in Indianapolis, I'm an IP.
Greg's a huge fan.
Yeah, I'm an IPS survivor, and I got out of IPS, and then I got to college, and I was technically homeless for about a week.
Really?
Yeah, and I had to like pay my own way, and then I had three different jobs. Still was trying to go to IUPUI at the time, and then when I really like I met another libertarian here in town, Joel Palmer, who mm-hmm. was helping me out, and he had a bunch of also like a lot of liberal socialists that were hanging around him. They were like basically using him to live at his house. And just the two exposing ideas of having like this one libertarian sitting right there next to these socialists, and he's doing things, he's getting paid, and the socialist is sitting on his butt on the couch playing Grand Theft Auto.
Right.
So I was like, okay, well, who do I follow? Who do I like, you know, like try to, you know, imitate to so I can, you know, get stable in my life, and I follow Joel.
Right. Joel actually went to the Supreme Court, and it's one of the reasons that it is illegal for there to be roadblocks to stop people and just randomly search for drugs in their cars. I forget what it was, somebody v. Indianapolis, but Joel was a part of the lawsuit and helped the Supreme Court realize that just having these roadblocks, similar to drunk driving checkpoints, are illegal. So,
if there was only an article in the U.S. Constitution like preventing illegal search and seizures,
if they'd only
thought about that,
there's something. It's just it's very vague.
It's very vague. Yeah,
yeah.
And the wording's off.
It's all up to interpretation.
Yeah.
So, So you met Joel, and so how did your philosophy? I mean, where are you now? I mean, the thing that I find is a lot of people start as a Republican or a Democrat, and they become disaffected with their party. You know, I became disaffected with George Bush and just couldn't defend him anymore from, you know, philosophical and principled point of view. And then my big hang-up was foreign policy, and Ron Paul in 2008 smashed through that. And even then I had hang-ups, and then you just sort of – you're a work in progress as a libertarian. So where would you say you're at sort of on that journey? I mean, are you like, I love gun control, but I do this or that? I mean, where would you say your philosophy stands?
I never really liked gun control. Like, I always thought, like, you know, the world would be safer if everyone had a gun, which also didn't really kind of mesh with being a Democrat. And then when I got into college and really started getting into, like, a really huge, like, American and African-American history, I started to realize I was lied to through IPS. And then I started to become a Republican, and I did vote for Bush. And
please leave. Anyone who voted for Bush, leave.
Anyone who organized an event up for 9/11, please leave.
All right. Gina, podcast is all yours. And it was a wreck.
Man.
And then, and I couldn't, like, because I always believed, like, oh, he just needs 4 more years and he'll turn this, you know, turn the ship around. And it never really happened in 2008. Ron Paul happened. I was like, okay, maybe he's on to something. And I just kind of came to the Libertarian Party. And my relationship then, when I became a Libertarian, because I just really kind of believe that everyone should just do what they want as long as it's not hurting anybody.
Right.
And then when I try to mess with the voluntarists and the anarcho-capitalist people, those people, I understand where they're coming from. I see that as a nice goal which humanity can progress to. Let's go there. Once technology and people get to that point that we don't need a government, that's great. But right now, that's not the reality.
Right. So, Harry, you are black, correct?
That is correct.
Okay. And so
it's an uncanny resemblance in voice to Thomas Sowell. Do you know Thomas Sowell? It's uncanny.
You know what? You are right.
I mean, unbelievable.
Even kind of looks a little bit like Thomas Sowell. Kind of has I think it's the glasses, most of all. So
the story's the same, too. Started out a Marxist in Harlem, became the leading scholar at the Hoover Institute.
So you mentioned that you felt you had been lied to about, African-American history? Like, what do you mean?
Correct. Because you go through, in IPS, they always try to do Black History Month, and they try to do it up real well, but they only kind of take a snippet of Black history.
Like George Carver Washington and...
Barely, and they only touch, like, oh, he made peanuts. Okay, right. That's great. That's anything else he did. Or it's 1963 and up Black history.
Right.
So you don't really try to hear about, like... Frederick Douglass, or what's his guy? The Black Mozart. I can't remember. During the French Revolution, I can't remember his name right now off the top of my head. But
the guy that wrote Three Musketeers,
Alexander Dumas.
No. The guy I'm talking about, he was almost beheaded by Napoleon. Actually, had to run to Haiti.
I'll look it up. So
do you continue. Prefer the term African-American, black?
Or? I despise the term African-American. I'm
with
not
you.
From Africa.
Right.
I've never left the United States, and if I do leave the United States, I'm not going to Africa.
Right.
Yeah.
I have a very good friend of mine who is Asiatic, and he's always had qualms with the term African-American, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not from Africa. I am.
It doesn't describe anything.
Right. Yeah. I prefer the term black. I'm black. That's
how about American?
People know what that is. Like, okay, yeah, I'll take American.
Hoosier.
Yeah. Hoosier.
Chevalier de St. George.
Yes.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Yeah.
Not technically a Hoosier. I actually was born in Lynn, Massachusetts.
From the left coast.
Oh.
Yep,
heaven
yep.
forbid.
Yep. So you're a Romney Republican.
And my uncle, who lives up in New Hampshire, that's where I got like a lot of my beliefs about guns from, because that's why he lived up in New Hampshire, because he couldn't stand being in Boston in that area around there because of the Republicans and like the way the gun control is. So he moved up to New Hampshire and just drove into Boston for work.
So we had a discussion about white versus black privilege at some point, and that really, you know, Trayvon Martin and several other things over the course of 2013 it really feels like, and it probably hasn't been, it's just been more talked about, but it feels like it has been more of a racially divisive year than we've seen in the past. I mean, do you sense that as well?
Yeah, like people are trying to gin up this whole faux racism for this last year and a half, it felt like.
Right.
From different points of view, like, well, they're only doing this because they're racist, or they were trying to talk Rand Paul because he said some, like, basically a
he didn't think the Civil Rights Act was necessary.
Correct.
Yeah.
Which it probably, and at the time, it probably looked out as necessary, but, you know, now it's probably, you know, it's old hat. It needs
to
go
away. Well, what Rand Paul was saying from a libertarian philosophical point of view in 2013, property rights are the foundation. We talked about this last episode. Property rights are the foundation of a civilized society. And you have the right to serve or kick out anybody that you don't want in your restaurant. If Hitler walks into my restaurant and I'm just not cool with Hitler, which I'm not, by the way, then I would kick him out. You know, I, as the property owner, would have the right to do that. And he made the mistake of saying that on the Rachel Maddow show. So it didn't end up going well. And, you know, so he's kind of tried to, and then Jack Hunter, we all love Jack Hunter here on this podcast. You know, but he said some things that we don't love, and he was on his staff, and, you know, that also was part of it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So. I guess the reason I would argue that the Civil Rights Act made a great deal of progress, because while, yes, as the property owner, you do have the right to determine who you serve and do not serve, or provide a service to or do not provide a service to, it gets sketchy when you exclude entire groups of people based upon what they look like.
Yeah, and there are also, if a federal government creates an issue, then is it incumbent upon the federal government to fix an issue years later? I mean, Woodrow Wilson was a virulent racist who put in many of the, he helped speed up a lot of the Jim Crow laws in the early 20th century.
Eugenics.
So, you know, the resegregation of the military. And so that's always one of the difficult parts about libertarianism, is we're now faced with a Leviathan that we have to start backtracking. There's a famous an infamous quote that we always stick Creighton with, that he was arguing with somebody early on in the early days of the podcast. And he's like, well, I guess you just have to make a law.
And then pass a law, bro. Pass a law.
You got to pass a law to fix a law. And so there are questions, to your point, where it's like, yeah, what was or was not necessary to fix certain things. So,
see, I actually do think it was necessary personally. I don't know that we would have progressed to the point, and if we would have, it would have been years and years of slow progress, bigotry, stupidity going on. And if your faith is in the American people to change their mind fast, good luck.
Right, yeah. It was necessary at the time, but should that be on the books 30, 40, 100 years down the road?
When now we're in a situation where all the people that those laws were implemented for certain people, because of the way that they behaved, well, those people aren't alive anymore. And our generation, the millennial generation, of which everyone on the podcast, we're all from Indianapolis, we're all, you know, around 30. Our generation is 40% mixed race. Okay, so it's not, and I'm saying that of, you know, let's say your mother is black, excuse me. I almost said African-American. I don't want to offend anyone.
Thank you.
Is black and your dad is white. Your mom is Asian. Your dad is black. You know, so that's 40% of our generation. We have no hang-ups about race. I mean, there, of course, are the extraordinary people that just are Neanderthals. But generally speaking, millennials don't have the same racial hang-ups.
Millennials, I don't know, though, because there's a huge hang-up against the Islamic culture.
That is true, yeah.
So without the Civil Rights Act, we might be in a situation where those people in America would suffer more than is necessary.
Yeah, but isn't that a cultural thing, that you can't really use a law to fix something that is,
but it's a nice defense if you find yourself as a victim.
The Bill of Rights.
Yeah.
They serve as the backbone and give you remedy.
Right. So why create a law when you've already got a law? the Bill of Rights.
But what I'm saying is the law that exists right now through the Civil Rights Act is why create a law when that law already exists that will extend its protection to people of more than just the black race, to people of all diverse backgrounds.
Harry?
So you're thinking like without the Civil Rights Act, people would be discriminatory towards Islamics?
As an example.
Transsexuals, homosexuals.
Right.
My point is that whether there's a law or not, people are going to be discriminatory. And the law doesn't necessarily fix anything. It's if you want to change, if you look at gay rights, for instance, this is a great example. It doesn't matter how many laws you pass or don't pass. It doesn't matter how many hate crime legislations that they passed through the 90s and the 2000s. What ultimately changed people's perception about gay rights were one, family members and friends saying, I'm gay, and having them realize, oh, they're not extraordinary or different. They're my cousin. They're my brother. They're my dad. They're my sister. Second,
that has contributed to the change, but would you say it's complete?
Second would be cultural influences, things like Will and Grace, things like Queer Eye for the Straight Guy. I really feel like that was a huge turning point, honestly, when people watched TV and fell in love with characters like the two guys on Modern Family. No, the old white man who is in the General Assembly who wants to use that to raise money from social conservatives, that still exists. But by and large, the culture has shifted to a point of acceptance for something that in the 70s was illegal in Britain.
But in Indianapolis, like I went to SMU. It was a very, first 2 years of college, went there, very elitist, very white, very Southern. I can tell you right now that they are 20, 30 years behind
where
we are. And for me, it's not fast enough. I'm not going to apologize for it. I want a law, want it fixed, give a remedy, change or get out.
Yeah, but if you, what kind of law are you looking for? What are you looking for? I mean, these laws that are the gay couple goes to the Christian photographers and then is turned down because they won't shoot their wedding. Like, A, why do you want those people photographing your wedding? And B, why would you want to force them to do something? Just the whole problem is government force, plain and simple. If you are a gay couple, you shouldn't force the Christian photographers to shoot your wedding. And if you're the Christian photographers, you shouldn't force the gay couple to not marry or not plan their life as they see fit.
When you're talking about luxury items like photography, for example, then you're in a different scenario than when you're talking about necessities like home and work.
What gay couple is currently not able to buy a home, or what black couple is? Or
in the state of Indiana, if your landlord discovers that you are gay, you have no protection that says that he can't kick you out of your home or your job.
Well, then the law that makes that possible should be repealed. The problem is the existence of a law that shouldn't be there in the first place, so it should be repealed.
What law is it that says that, or is it just the fact that there is no protection?
You tell me. I'm just now hearing about it for the first time.
Yeah, but that negates and goes against the grain of money. The landowner wants money. They want someone with a good credit rating to live inside their apartment, their rental house, and to live there so they can make money off it. If they go around and just discriminating against people because what they do inside their house, they're not going to have many tenants.
Right.
But
there's always a couple out there that's willing to take the place of whomever gets kicked out of their home.
Because they'll then be able to find the community and living area they want to be in that most matches who they want to be around.
Right. But and it's scary because like if somebody was forced to have someone that they of having a lifestyle that they do not choose to have living inside the rental property, so they're going to do since they're forced to have them there, they'll do sneaky other things to it. Oh, your condenser motor went on your AC unit. Yeah, it's going to be 2 weekish before that gets here. Hope you like these 110 heats. When in reality, he's probably got one in the truck.
The other thing is the government.
There are coercive measures.
I'm sorry, you can't legislate away assholes. I mean, they're always going to exist. And you're going to have that in the private sector, and you also have it in the government sector. If you go back and listen to our episode on Detroit from 2 or 3 or 4 months ago when Detroit went bankrupt, you know, we talked about how the ruling class of the city used the government to manipulate groups of people, mainly minorities, into certain segments of town to keep that segment, that section of town, to keep their property values down to protect their property values. They used the government.
Unofficial segregation.
Right, but yes. They used the government and they used their influence to manipulate outcomes and to be racist a-holes.
That's an issue of positive liberty. So like anytime it's a law where they are trying to influence behavior, right, that where they, what can the quote-unquote government do for you? That's horrible. That's awful, terrible kind of law. What I look for is essentially a ceiling on a law. So like a negative liberty, like the Bill of Rights. The government cannot do these things to you.
Right.
Right? So with the Civil Rights Act, it turned into a positive liberty law. And it was seen as essentially remediation for the crimes of the past. What I look for is, listen, period, you cannot be discriminated against in the free market whatsoever by any owner, operator, and you don't even have to do it by like fine, by legal. You just, all right, if you have X amount of infractions, your tax rate 75%. Then it's a negative influence. It's nothing like legally. It's just saying, if you're going to deny people, we're going to tax you the hell out of business. Simple as that. That's the framework I see government where it can be effective.
Please send all hate mail to Lenz, L-E-N-Z, at WeAreLibertarian.com. But yeah, I mean, you're creating laws for a specific set of people. I mean, I'm not...
For everybody. That is no matter what.
But who is making the decision as to who's being a racist or not?
Who's being a racist or not?
I mean, if you're denying people because of what factor, how do you know? Maybe they had crummy credit, or maybe this person didn't share the same values, or maybe this or that.
We could use the same criteria
but one
as
party,
the Fair Housing Act.
But one party is crying racism, and the other party, you know, the party that's crying, this happened to me because of this specific reason, where the other side may say, no, I did it for this reason. It has nothing to do with race. That happens all the time.
There's still funky rules inside the Fair Housing Act, by the way.
Right, and it doesn't cover gay couples, which is why in Indiana there is a precedence for gay people being kicked out of their homes.
Right, but like still kicking them out, if you go through the rules of the Fair Housing Act, it's you can still eke out 30 days out of a homeowner. They can't just kick you out that day, as long as you've got food in the fridge and any item of clothing hanged in the closet. They can't kick you out that day. They cannot.
And don't get me wrong, I agree with you guys. Like, ideally, the free market takes care of it. People aren't going to buy from people who are bigoted, blah, 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 blah.
Unless there's a big enough group of bigots.
Yeah, niche markets, right? So, however, though, for me personally, that's just not good enough. Like, I get it, where you guys want to go, but for me, that's just, it's not good enough. And that's where I'm different than most libertarians.
Right. You're a dirty statist. We understand.
Yeah.
Your plan would be neat, but like, it would have to have have to have a time limit. That cannot be on the books forever.
No, I think that's an interesting idea. I never considered essentially a sunset for laws. Yeah. That's a really interesting idea. I like it.
So, Harry, what are your opinions on things like affirmative action? I mean, do you believe that in the beginning affirmative action had its role and now it no longer is needed, or is it just a bad idea from the very start? I mean, what's your opinion on that?
I understand the feelings that went with the affirmative action, but it is not needed now. It probably could have went away or started to scale itself back 20 so years ago, but now it's old hat and has no place being here in 2013 America. Trying to say where you came from is the reason why you don't have a good education or you can't get along in life, that's on yourself. That's not because of your race or that's all on your own actions. With the internet allows you to learn anything. You can sit down with a computer and pick up anything off the internet, regardless of what bad teachers you could probably have at your schools. I did it myself.
I would say in this day and age, most of our problems are socioeconomic and less about race. I mean, amongst our generation, at least, your disadvantage comes more from what what economic class you grew up in versus what racial class you grew up in.
I mean, that's a truth, but to a certain extent, based upon history, there are people who have had lesser chances. There are people, we don't all start at the same starting line, I guess is what I'm saying.
Right, but in this day and age, we're, don't you, I get the sense that many things are much more, things are more equal than they've ever been, especially with our generation, and that yes, things were this way in the past, but things are no longer that way.
I mean, we've made progress, but I wouldn't say equal is the word to use.
I mean, for,
but
for,
even if you had like different starting points, the endpoints still do change. I had a friend that I was friends through all through high school. He actually had that good background. He two parent household from Cicero, nice family. They've made tons of money, and we both went to college at the same time. We all and. Where I'm at is a different position than where he's at right now. I'm into my career. I'm and I'm progressing toward into getting making my the company I work for getting higher, and I'm upper management now. He is not. He's still in the same spot he was when he was like 19 years old. He's almost 30 now. So to me, it's not like where you start from. It's all what you wanted as a goal out of life. He wants to play video games and make a little money just so he can play video games. That's fine. I don't want that.
So are you saying that it's all about the power of the individual and that the government cannot craft certain outcomes for certain people?
Correct.
Okay.
Like if I wanted to, like if I needed a database built at work, I have no idea how to build a database. I had no clue how to do it. I'm a computer networking guy. I took 4 days, learned a little SQL, and boom, I've got a database.
Right. By the way, Harry, thank you for all the computer work you do for Rupert's Kids. Harry came in to volunteer one day and said, hey, does anybody know how to do this? And he's like, sure, I do. And then all of a sudden, next thing you know, turn around, Harry's the computer consultant for Rupert's
IT
Kids.
IT guru.
He's there every other day.
Nice.
And Georgette's like, I don't understand. Why is my email not working?
That is a burden, and I sympathize with you. The rule of thumb should be never pretend you know anything about computers. All you're going to do is create questions and a time suck for yourself.
Yep.
Yeah, it just kind of happened. I saw it on the Facebook post, like, hey, this is broken, and no one replied to it. It's like, oh, I feel bad.
They weren't stupid, Harry.
So I said, sure, I know how to fix that. And,
if you're ever at a card table and you can't find the sucker...
let's ask Harry. I mean, do you feel that things are more equal than when we were kids, or do you? I mean, where? What is the state of racism in 2013, Harry Price?
When it comes to race, it's it's there is no what is equal in race? That's also goes back. It's a myth trying to make races equal. We're all humans, and humans are basically about the same, but we're not all the same,
right?
So trying to say like how the races are equal, like you have equal chance at anything. I'm working for my company, I started there as a basic tech, and I've passed up everyone and came to upper management. Like I've passed the two other white guys in front of me. I passed both of them up.
Right, just because of your individual merits, your hard work.
Right, my boss saw me having the ability to see a problem, fix that problem, get to that problem, do it quickly, and the other two guys, I'll get to it, and... So I got promoted ahead of them. It was a, and it always, with affirmative action on the books, like, is that gnawing? It's always a gnawing question at me. It's like, did I get this position because, well, this looks good for his company because he's got, a guy from Honduras as a scrap manager and he's got a black guy as another manager. It's like, yeah, this makes his company look better.
Like, if you were on Rachel Maddow right now, she would be hammering you with that. Oh, of course, he succeeds,
Right, but
blah, blah, blah.
But yeah. Let me be Rachel Maddow. Doesn't that in and of itself, I mean, the fact that I personally would never have to have that thought, and we've had these sorts of conversations with Maya with, Maya is transitioning from male to female, and there are many things that Maya goes through on a daily basis that are cognitive thoughts that I just don't have. I mean, things like that, those cognitive thoughts that you might have that I wouldn't have, I mean, doesn't that speak to the fact that there is still a little bit of a nagging question here?
Right, yeah, because it does. It just nags at me. Like, when I got an IEPY, I was like, well, am I here because of my merit or because affirmative action gave me that many points and this is some white guy who's maybe better than me that's sitting at home?
Right, but that question in particular is not created by society. It's created by a government program.
But I think to a certain extent it is created by society, because we live in a society where we feel that not everyone is entitled to an education. So on a ground core level, it is a societal issue. For example, we live in a society where you can't graduate from college unless you have X amount of adaptability in mathematics. And if mathematics is not your strength, it's not your strong point, no amount of liberal arts is going to get you through to get a college education.
But you picked the wrong college. You could have gone to Sarah Lawrence and majored in like art history.
Yeah.
Or
Western Governor University, or went to IEPY with the Mac Center, which is the Math Assistance Center.
The Math Assistance Center, though, some people have a ceiling of capacity within mathematics.
Right. That's the,
right.
I raised my hand.
That's the biggest reason why I left IEPY. They were having me do all these humanity courses. Like, I don't really care about humans that much. I care about technology. Please teach me more about
you
this
and
stuff.
I are the exact opposites in that respect. Like, I left IEPY because I was done with math. I hit my ceiling at basic algebra, and I got a job in radio at the time, and I am great at English and history and the humanities and the liberal arts, but if you ask me my times tables, I need your toes, too, to count all of them. I mean, I just, you know, it's just sad how bad I am at mathematics.
It's easy.
No, it's not. It's really not. Like, those word problems.
For some people, it really is, but could you sit down and write a dissertation on certain... You know, like, I don't know your background or your history, but could you sit down and write a dissertation on Jane Eyre?
I could. If I had the internet, I would probably just, outsource that to some other country and have someone else write that for
Fiverr.
Me. Okay. Fiverr. Yeah. I'd use Fiverr, which Fiverr is a great website. If you're not using Fiverr, you should be. My company actually uses Fiverr all the time.
Is that how you got all your Facebook fans? No comment.
So, have you personally experienced racial incidents? I mean, I've got several. I've got black friends, Harry, as well. And
that's very racist.
Your best friend, right?
Yeah.
Listen, I'm not a racist. I've got black friends.
Saying I have black friends is very racist. Say I have friends.
And they have experienced incidents where they're just walking down the street and they get called certain names, or they have been in situations. I mean... But he's 20 years older than us. I mean, what is it like for... how old are you?
I am 28.
Oh, you look terrible for your age.
Thank you.
No, just kidding. So, I mean, at our age, I mean, do you experience a lot of those things? Or is it just very, very rare, if ever?
I have never really experienced, like, out front, in your face, racism.
Welcome to We Are Libertarians for this episode.
Can't say that after today.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've never seen it. Like, unless someone, like, really goes out in the way, tries to offend me. Like, I've seen those stupid script kiddies on, like, Xbox Live, and they'll say, like, bad N-word, blah, 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 blah. But they're just anonymous users, and they think they're cool. They're using a taboo word, and I can't touch them. So they feel it's okay to use that.
Right. Do you feel the opposite, where people are afraid to offend you?
Yes, I do that. That is the weirdest feeling. Usually when I'm around people, like, well, I don't know if I can use that. You know, I was like, oh, man, is he going to get offended? Like, I have a 19-year-old kid that works for us that we pulled out of Rolls Holman because he was wasting his money getting a college degree. He was like, no, just come work with us.
Pulled a Zuckerberg.
Yeah. Just leave. Just
wait, don't get all that college here. Debt.
Yeah. Screw that debt. Yeah.
If you're in college,
go learn Java. It'll help you.
We'll talk about college in a minute.
He's making $14 an hour working for us in our tech department. We needed a new guy. He could do everything we needed to do. It's like, boom, we've got him. He's ours. We've locked him in. You can't have him.
So tell us more about how awkward he is around you.
Yeah, at first month, he didn't know, like, the whole, like, department didn't know what to do with me. Like, you know, like, he goes to this Jordan's Fish and Chicken shop down the street from the business, and he wanted to ask me to come, and he's like, I don't know how he's going to take that. maybe it's like, which I've never been there. I was like, I don't know if it, you know. So when he offered me, and I was like, and I was shocked in my face. He was like, oh, I didn't mean to offend. I was like, no, you're not offending me. I just never been to there. Is it any good?
What if he thought you were a vegetarian?
Right.
Is that exposing your racism?
Yeah. Are you a racist, Harry? You racist asshole.
If I was racist, it was okay. It's okay for me to be racist.
Okay. All right.
Just like it is okay since
he's
you
got
have
black
a best friends.
Friend. Right. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I can say that Harry is black and ask him that because some of my best friends are black.
Right, exactly.
Right.
We do, though, condone one type of racism on the show, and that is racism against Canadians.
That's right.
And that is totally justified.
How do you feel poor about Canadians. the great white menace of the North, Harry?
We should probably close that border, keep them out, just all like the border around Gary. We need to put that wall up.
This is where my foreign policy experience is a useful tool. If we ever invade... I'm your guy.
Canadian Bacon was an instructional manual. It is a view into the future. And they asked the great question, Gina Martinez, have you ever had Canadian food?
Oh, yes.
No, you haven't because it does not exist. Liar.
Poutine, baby. Poutine.
Poutine. Why does it sound sexy when she says it?
See?
Yeah. So.
Yeah. Because everyone also knows that global warming is a scheme cocked up by the Canadian government to flood the rest of the world and turn Canada into a tropical paradise.
That's right.
Very true.
Well, they're clever bastards.
Mm-hmm. So I want to hear more stories of racial awkwardness, though, because that sounds like it's a topic rife with great stories. I mean, it really does. Like, what are some other instances where people have been awkward and weird around you other than this podcast?
It's not just this podcast. It's usually when I'm in and I get a group of, like, white people.
Goddamn white people. I'd say it every single day of my life.
I was at Gen Con 2007, and someone was doing a documentary on, like, minorities and gaming, right?
Right.
And they saw me with my friend D. And they're like, oh man, we need to interview them, but you know, they want to interview us because we're black gamers.
Right.
Like they didn't really know how to approach us, and then finally, like someone just broke the ice, brought the camera up, and started asking us.
Isn't there like a token black guy in every Dungeons and Dragons group?
Yeah, usually. Yeah. Yeah, that's how I got to my group. IUPUI assigned it us. He's like, oh, you need a black guy here. Go with these guys.
Well,
affirmative action working in your favor.
May we call you the We Are Libertarians black correspondent then?
Sure. Yeah,
all right.
Yeah.
Good. Good.
Asian correspondent Trisha talking to me.
No, Harry and I were at Tux's and Tenny's Rupert's event, and we just were kind of talking about some of this stuff. And I was like, you need to come on the show and talk about some of this stuff. And so. So we're happy to have you here, and thank you for coming on and serving as our black correspondent. We've got Gina Martinez, our female correspondent.
Yes, I get to be... Well, we have two female correspondents, but right. I'm the one without a penis.
Right.
Just so we're clear.
We'll explain that later. And then we have Joe, our Hispanic correspondent.
Illegal alien.
Right, illegal alien, Joe Ruiz. And then I am the obese correspondent. and Greg, I don't know what you are. You're just a normal...
I'm the scumbag Republican hates Muslims.
That's right, yeah. All righty. So let's talk about dropping out of college, Harry. Let's sort of... We'll talk about some of the current events, but you and I think share this. I went to IUPUI from 2002 to 2006, and the thing that I learned in college was that if you are on an off-ramp or an exit ramp or an on-ramp on the interstate and you see the speed limit posted on the ramp, you can take that ramp at that speed and there will be zero... you can do it if there's pure ice. Okay, so that number and that ramp are designed for zero friction. Like, that is the thing that I learned in college, that little tidbit. Nothing else. That's it. College, to me, it did teach me a little bit about critical thinking. I did learn how to sleep in my car during breaks, and it helped me get a job at a radio station. But other than that, I really didn't find college to be all that useful. I found myself learning stuff that relearning stuff that had been taught in high school. So I didn't graduate with a degree in history as I had planned, with a minor in communications. And I've done real well for myself since then. I know grammar inside and out.
Well, I mean, also, though, you're a talented guy, so if you had punched your ticket and done the whole dog and pony show, you're in a really high spot.
I don't
it
know
just
that
may have happened earlier.
I don't think so. I think I had so many friends in college during those years who didn't work. They didn't have jobs. They were waiting to get a job for when they graduated. And their parents supported them through college because they were going to college and they didn't need to work. So they had like little part-time jobs, but they didn't have careers or get started. And the pushing me to work because I went to IEPY because I had to pay for it myself. I got to work on campaigns. I got to work at the radio station. I got to I started my career a little bit earlier than everybody else. And so when the job downturn hit at the end of our college experience, I found myself with a job, and those people who waited, they didn't have jobs. Some of them are much more stunted in their careers than I am. And I was very fortunate to go to IUPUI, make the connections that I did, and it really was the networking. The benefit of college is networking.
Right. I was going to say the same thing.
Yeah.
To me, that was the priceless experience, is meeting all the people on campus and getting a chance to relate and get different perspectives. Like, I was really fortunate and blessed. I didn't think I'd be able to go to college because of financial strains, but I've actually been offered 2 scholarships and my short little lifetime. But one was through an organization that primarily focused on labor unions, and they had said the elderly, but I didn't really get an opportunity to work with the elderly. So I ran into a situation where they changed the criteria on me the first year that I was active in the program. So when I asked in advance if there would be like an internship required, I was told no, and I made my childcare arrangements accordingly.
Right.
However, when I got to the class, the teacher had changed his mind over the break and decided that there would be an element that required something like 20 hours. And I just wasn't able to meet that commitment with my family obligations.
Right.
So as a result, I ended up losing my scholarship because I wasn't able to perform some requirement of that class.
Right.
And at that point, I started my political whatever endeavor.
Yes,
my political shenanigans. Ended up pregnant, took one class.
That's what happens when you get involved in the Libertarian Party, ladies.
Right. It's that bag.
Join the LP and find yourself pregnant.
Well, so, I mean,
no, it's unrelated.
Right, yeah. So
nobody in the Libertarian Party gets laid, trust me.
So at that point, I took one class that I really cared about, something that I was passionate about in high school, and now I've got like a $1,400 bursar bill that I have no way of paying because I'm currently a stay-at-home mom. So there is no way for me to repay that debt, in addition to now that it's been so many semesters, I would have to reapply, and I'm just not motivated given the experience that I've had.
I paid $12,000 for a great networking opportunity.
Right.
And no degree. I mean, and I don't think that my degree, I mean, the last 3 jobs that I've had, which have been great jobs, the Libertarian Party, the advertising job with the Advocates, and then my current job now, the Engelhart Group and the place I work at now haven't even asked for a resume. They just knew me, and I had done work for them, and they had seen my commitment and my merits. Yeah, they didn't ask if I had a college degree. In fact, my mom asked that because my mom's like, "You didn't get a college degree." You know, that's an accurate depiction, by the way.
I love your mom. Hush up.
I know. I love her too. But she's like, "Did they ask about your college degree?"
Well, that's what her generation was hammered. They had
right,
and I mean, we had it hammered into our heads
that's
too.
Right.
You're not going anywhere without a college degree.
Yeah, kept hearing that over and over.
We were told that if you go to college and you go to a private school especially, then you would graduate college and get a job at $60,000. Everybody remembers that chart of, you know, if you just get a high school, here's what you're going to make and it's going to be $30,000 a year. Here's what happens when you go to college. So everybody went to college and now we've got all this college debt amongst our generation.
Right.
And the job market sucks. And the people like myself who did start, who did get a head start on working, you get jobs that it stunts your salary a little bit, you know. So
well, it created its own problem too,
right?
The student debt burden stopped entrepreneurship,
right?
Mm-hmm.
Because you have those, and so now we're facing stagnation. We don't have realistically the new business formation from the numbers I've seen by Kauffman Foundation are scary. We're looking at a stagnant economy for a very long time.
And what
is
What is the percentage of people that work for small businesses, Greg?
Oh, it's 84%.
Right. 84% of our nation works for small businesses. I technically work for one. Greg owns one. You as well?
Yeah, correct.
Yeah. I would say, you know, Creighton worked for a political organization, but that's realistically a small business as well.
I used to own a small business.
You owned one. Joe worked for a big, giant corporation.
But he wants to start his own thing.
He does. So, you know, small business is the engine of America. So what was your college experience like, Harry? Why did you end up not – why do you have this distaste for college that you are telling young people to drop out?
Because it was a complete, total waste of time. I didn't have that whole networking experience. Most of the people that I met of any merit, I met leaving campus. When I left campus, I've met, you know, that's how I met Joel. I didn't meet Joel on campus. When I left campus, started to meeting people. And when I got reason I got off campus and started dropped out of school is because I had a problem with a lot of the politics inside of University College. I actually worked for them as a student assistant, and they wanted me to switch over to being an intern for them, but would have messed up my major, and they wouldn't let me work for so many hours, and I was homeless anyways. It was a bad experience for me, so I tried to figure out a way to pay for it. So I got a job working for a small local company, Crystal Food Services. I started working for them as a setup guy inside their and also doing kitchen work. And the guy saw potential in me, and I got promoted up to becoming a bartender. And I was seeing how much money I could make, some of it tax-free, as being a bartender. And I was like, why would I go back and just get some more debt on myself when I can put some of this money back and buy other things?
Right.
So I stayed as a bartender. Then I saw an opportunity to become one of the room supervisors of their captains. I did that for about 2 weeks. The assistant general manager left for another job, and then they needed someone to be their operations manager, and I applied for it. And lo and behold, from the connections I got from meeting people through the company for being there for so long, they gave me the position.
You know, it is funny that I was just thinking while Harry was talking. The We Are Libertarians Network is made up of probably a dozen people, easily, between the writers at our website at wearelibertarians.com and those who do podcasts at wal-radio.com. I think, Greg, you might be the only college graduate.
Joe is getting his MBA.
He's getting his MBA.
Yeah, Ripley's going to get his MBA.
And then Suzanne is in college, but Creighton dropped out to go work for YAL. The Peppers brothers dropped out from IUPUI. You dropped out from IUPUI. I dropped out from IUPUI. You, Harry, dropped out from IUPUI. I see a pattern here.
Well, I was just being stuck in the classes. Like, I went to a lot of computer classes, and like I said, I can learn a lot of the stuff they were trying to teach me by myself with my laptop at home. I didn't need to have to pay to sit there and learn all this stuff.
I'm currently managing a huge transition of very technical computer-related, website-related issues. I'm building video systems, and I'm building podcasting systems, and I'm redoing websites and transferring name servers and all that kind of stuff. I never went to school for any of that. I learned all of it because I Googled my questions or I went on YouTube and watched videos, and mm-hmm. I've kept up with the technology. And honestly, building my own website, chrisspangle.com, back in 2007, the day after Thanksgiving, learning how to build my own website was a far better education than anything I ever paid for. I paid for it.
College used to be about skill acquisition.
Right.
Unfortunately, it's no longer. Society moves so fast now that it's outdated by the time you graduate. And then it's also used to be about learning critical thinking, you know, especially learning that liberal arts ability to deconstruct an argument, to deconstruct a thought, all these things. And learning about the liberal arts education is becoming sort of that whole holistic person, well-educated, not a specialist in anything, but sort of generally well-educated. And that's become antiquated in today's society. Your skill set determines.
There's a value to it.
Right. Oh, there absolutely is, but it's not monetary.
It's difficult to justify. Exactly. It's difficult to justify the expense that we're currently expected to foot the bill for while trying to survive.
Correct. Yeah. If you get out of college with what's the low side of it now? $40,000 in debt?
$40,000, $50,000.
Yeah. If you go to a state school like IUPUI, yeah.
Yeah, you get out with this huge debt with interest the moment you start out. It's like you could get small amount of houses for like in Detroit for $40,000.
God forbid you need a master's, which damn near every field does anymore.
Right.
Yep.
And
which,
then you're overeducated for a lot of different jobs, for a lot of entry-level jobs.
Because, you know, this happened to my wife. She applied for 500 jobs. And she didn't get hired for a lot of the jobs because they were afraid, because she's college educated, that she would leave their low-level job to go work in her field of graphic design. Mm-hmm. She just went back to school, got another education in cosmetology and hairstyling, which is a far better industry for stability than graphic design is, ironically.
Yeah.
She was doing pagination for newspapers in the Yellow Pages. There's a job that's going to be around in 10 years. So I would say if you're a young person and you're looking at college, if you need a systematic approach to what Greg talked about, deconstructing arguments, learning to write, that full liberal arts education of understanding how to break down an argument, how to write a paper, how to craft an argument, how to research, how to understand and appreciate the classics, how to appreciate reading. If you need a systematic approach, you're not self-disciplined, then you should go to college and you should get that education. If you're a self-starter, you love to read. If, you know, somebody like myself, I loved college because I was being provided things, but it wasn't necessarily anything that was a necessity. It really was kind of like, I know what I'm interested in. I know what jobs I want to have. I know what skills I need. I can acquire them on my own for a minimal cost by acquiring the materials myself. And so I think if you're that kind of personality, it might not be worth it for you.
No, you're going to be frustrated by being in it.
Exactly. And I was. And so now I have a bunch of money that I've invested in two different educations. One I built for myself that I use, and one that I don't. So take it for what it is. I don't think that all college is unnecessary.
But like libertarians, right, too, that's kind of it's a sampling error. They're very much self-starters, independent, self-reliant. That ain't the majority of society.
Truth.
Correct.
So yeah. College is a great bet. If those types of things scare you, if you don't have that discipline or that curiosity towards growing what you know and what you're interested in, if you work to live, your best bet's go to college.
Right.
If you live to work, you're going to be frustrated as hell.
Oh, yeah. Every time. I was sitting in a class and someone was trying to teach me binary code. I was like, come on, I learned this in 97. Can we move on, please?
Right.
But then there's another thing was the when I went to college, they did instill in me that love to read and read like a, but I don't find time to do it. When I sit down to read a book, like people hear that I buy books all the time, like, oh, what books do you have? Well, I've got a Cisco CCNA courses. I've got the CISSP course. They're technical manuals. I read technical manuals,
right,
all day, every day. And like the one like human type of like any good reading I get is new technology when it comes down to blog sites or some technology like podcast that I get to watch and listen to. Other than that, it's dry technical manuals.
Yeah.
And that's where the world's gone, is the long-form reading has been replaced by the blog post, because that's where the cutting edge is. And if you want to be relevant and a leader in whatever field you're in, that's where you go for knowledge. If you're trying to accumulate like a base, you read the books, you read those types of things. But when you get past that and beyond it, there's no book coming out in the business world, entrepreneur world, technology world. You have to be reading the blogs of thought leaders.
I mean, there are books coming out, but by the time they get to you, it's outdated.
Exactly.
Yeah, especially with especially with technology. Unless the government like is involved in like certain technology, that just stagnates to like no end. I fell into like a rabbit hole a couple of weeks ago, worrying about the type of the technology point that goes from the transponder signal at an airport to the airplane. That is some of the most.
Oh. All right, Harry, the whole audience just tuned out the second you mentioned that. Thanks a lot.
Sorry, it's just weird, like, because the signal that comes from, like, basically the packet that gets sent from the airport to the airplane is just unencrypted. It's just out there. You could probably pull that packet out.
Well, thanks for putting that on our podcast. Now we're all going to jail. Gina's on the list now. Thanks a lot.
Well, Gina started out on list shit.
We're on a libertarian podcast, and we supported Edward Snowden. We've been on list for a while.
All right, so let's move on to a couple topics. Let's start out with the budget deal. I don't know how much Harry knows about this. I can say with certainty that our next two topics, Gina and I have not studied for yet. So again, like normal, we turn to the intrepid
wise one, Greg Lenz.
Who has done his research on both issues, on both Obamacare nullification and the budget. So let's start there. Let's start with the great libertarian hope, Paul Ryan.
Well,
and John Boehner. Right, Greg?
He just went from a leading conservative to John McCain in one budget negotiation. It was
music to my ears.
It's nothing. It's a two-year agreement. Right now, by the end of the next presidential cycle, we'll be on pace for $25 trillion in public debt. The budget adds $70 billion in spending this year and next year, and all the cuts happen in 2022 and 2023. They just really kicked the can down the road. The spending increases, they are small. There were no income tax hikes for the Republicans. None of the entitlement reform that we need, that wasn't touched. They raised some airline fees in order to fund some of this. Unemployment wasn't extended.
Because there's an industry that can afford more fees, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. We're going to get high-speed rail just because flying's so damn expensive.
Right.
Really, federal workers have to contribute a little more to their retirements. Military, same way. Reduction for military retirees, very small in their cost of living adjustments. It's nothing. I mean, it's a continuation. The biggest thing is that Jeff Sessions has procedurally filibustered, so Reid has to get 60 votes in order to get it to pass in the Senate. And I don't think Cruz or Rand will do it because politically it's a smart thing to do. It really is. This keeps the discussion on Obamacare, which for the Republicans is how they're going to pick up votes in the November elections. However, all these groups like Americans for Prosperity, Heritage Foundation, probably even the Advocates for Self-Governance, I mean, all of them down the line have been fundraising for these true fiscal conservatives that are going to get our debt under control. They got sold out by Boehner and Paul Ryan.
Yeah, the Advocates is a purely educational organization.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry, I shouldn't have done that. I was thinking of someone else.
How dare you?
I was thinking about Club for Growth, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, all it is, it's business as usual. Politically, though, brilliant move, especially for Paul Ryan. He positions himself as the grown-up candidate in the next presidential election. He's the one that can broker deals. But for Rubio, for Paul, for Ted Cruz, all of them are just going to hammer it all week, but ultimately end up passing the Senate, and we're going to have a budget.
I just didn't really do a lot of studying on this because it didn't seem like it actually would mean anything. I mean, they constantly have these deals, and they constantly are doing anything. But the money saved is just a drop in the bucket.
And it's way the hell down the line.
And it's way down the line, yes. And it just doesn't really mean anything.
Which future Congresses aren't beholden to their budget.
Yeah. I mean, really, they haven't passed. Barack Obama has never once signed a budget into law. The Senate hasn't passed a budget in, what is it, 7 years?
Yeah.
Nine? Something ridiculous? I mean, it's... Our government continually operates on continuing resolutions.
Because it's easier.
Do they need a budget?
Do they need one? Technically, no, because the CIA, NSA, that's an off-budget item. So, realistically, it's money we're spending that's unlimited, and we don't know about it.
Yeah.
And Gina is filing her nails. Let me tell you how groundbreaking this news story was. Gina is filing her nails.
No, it is groundbreaking, but like you said, they're... It's so out of control. Our budget is so out of control. It's so far askew of what it needs to be in order to make progress on behalf of the American people or the people of the world that it's difficult to rein it in and get it under control. And what you described does not sound like a step in the right direction.
No. And they were saying, well, it keeps 70% of the sequester cuts. Yeah, but the sequester cuts were nothing. They were cuts on future spending. Like
they act like the sequester was this great grand budget deal that saved... Mm-hmm. trillions and trillions and put us back on the fiscal course to sanity.
And Paul Krugman writes an article for New York Times saying how damning and mean it is for these people that have been on unemployment for 99 weeks and how we're not going to extend it and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, what are you talking about?
Right.
What planet does that man live on?
Not the one you and I are on, my friend.
Apparently not.
But it could be a planet where there aren't enough jobs to keep everyone afloat.
Yeah, but that planet seems to be the planet created by this entire fiscal policy of the Barack Obama administration and
the House Republicans. Well, I mean, it existed before Barack Obama came into
absolutely. I mean, Bush and Barack Obama, there's really no difference when it comes down to, you know, their approach towards things.
It's Bush would have probably gone into Syria.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's about the biggest difference.
I don't think there's many places Bush wouldn't have gone.
Yeah,
the opportunity.
North Korea,
a gay club.
Yeah, okay. Both of those are probably valid.
Yeah. Interesting. There was an article. I forget. I think it was BuzzFeed had all the photos of Bush and Obama and them dining together, flying out to the Mandela funeral with the Clintons and everything. Just sort of interesting behind the scenes looks at some of that stuff. So check that out.
I mean, I would have the hardest, and I know it's politics, and you do whatever you need to do to win. But if I was George W. Bush, I would have the hardest time sitting in a room with that man. I mean, he demonized him as essentially Lucifer on Earth.
Right.
Yes.
And the fact that George Bush just stomachs it, brushes it off, I mean, it really doesn't even bother him. Like, that is a sign of, like, actually decent character, that you can be the
Correct.
Bigger man and just, hey, whatever.
Yeah. I would be so petty and petulant.
Oh, absolutely. He hasn't said a word since he left office about a negative thing about any of his policies.
Right.
Period.
Right. But if you Correct. Think for a moment that he isn't influencing people who are clogging up the works on everything in Congress, that...
But George Bush... You got to remember, he was an outsider. He was a Texas outsider, and he has no influence in the Beltway at all.
I feel like Turd Blossom,
really?
Turd
yeah.
Blossom,
Dick Cheney
Carl,
does.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah,
Cheney and Turd Blossom, That's Karl Rove seem to do exactly what you're yeah. describing. Bush seems to be the type of person who just like, I'm gonna sit around and do my painting. Yes. I'm gonna take a bath.
Yeah, that's why he picked you up. Hey, that's why he had to pick up Cheney, because in 2000 he was the peace candidate.
Right. Yeah, he was against nation building. So, all right. Any other thoughts on the budget building? Or the whatever?
I mean,
budget building.
There were no big losses, no big wins. It's kind of bleh.
Yeah, it just kind of keeps the beat going. And
politically, though, it was a really good move. It's going to help the Republicans.
So let's talk a little bit about Obama nullification and then a little update on Obamacare. The Obamacare, here in Indiana, we're a state of 6.5 million people. And last month, 3,500 people signed up. It's like a dozen in Oregon. But they had about 140,000 people sign up for Obamacare last month, those who could get through the website. So the numbers aren't that great, but it may crash at any moment. It may not survive some of these crummy numbers. But just in case it does end up surviving, South Carolina has actually taken some steps to do some nullification. The concept of nullification is the 10th Amendment. It's the 9th Amendment, where the federal constitution outlines 17 specific activities that the federal government may do, as outlined and declared by the states that ratified the constitution. And everything else, not enumerated in the constitution, was left to the states by the 9th and 10th Amendment. Now, that sounds like a wacky concept compared to where we are today. And so under that line of thinking, a state can declare a federal law unconstitutional within its borders, thus nullifying the law. So, Greg, what are some of the things that South Carolina is doing with Obamacare?
So House Bill 3101 just passed. It's the South Carolina State House. Representatives just passed. Still's got to go to their Senate, but they expect it to pass in January, and then Governor Nikki Haley will sign it. What it does, it's called the South Carolina Freedom of Healthcare Protection Act. It prohibits any agencies, officers, or employees of the state of South Carolina from implementing any provisions of the Affordable Care Act. It outlaws the state exchanges. It outlaws when the state attorney general has got to sue the government. But if they pass this law, the federal government, and then anytime you get a penalty under the American Care Act from the federal government, they offer a tax deduction in the exact amount of said penalty at the state level.
Wow. Okay.
And the funny thing is realistically, the federal government could fund, have a special fund to come and set up a DEA, a federal agency in South Carolina for its implementation. South Carolina is a small enough state. That's a real feasible outcome. However, I have a feeling this is going to be a domino thing where state after state after state that's at the federal exchanges is going to do the same thing. They're going to pass the same type of bill, assuming they can pass it. So the federal government would then have to create a brand new agency to go in and implement it in every single state, and the funds aren't there. It'd never get out of the House, especially with Boehner as Speaker. So Napolitano wrote an article this week saying this is the way to defund the American Affordable Care Act. And now Spangle talked about the states ratifying the Constitution. And that's actually the interesting part of this, in my opinion, because that's called compact theory.
Right.
That's where you're saying that we, the states, agreed to this contract, the Constitution, and ratified it. And when we find a law to not be in pursuance of the Constitution, we will, in fact, not enforce it. We will reject it and nullify it. That was James Madison came up with, wrote that in the Virginia Resolution against the Alien and Sedition Acts. Thomas Jefferson authored the Kentucky Resolution, which said the same thing. The other theory is interposition. That's where you issue a declaration saying this law is unconstitutional, but you still can implement it until the Supreme Court has issued a ruling. The last one, and this is what they're basing it on, and this is why we have the Supremacy Clause. It says in the preamble...
It's always racism with you, seriously.
It is. And we the people...
Psst, Harry's right there.
But this is what the Federal Supremacy Clause is based on, that the Constitution in the preamble says, we the people of the United States. So it is, in fact, the people who decided to form the government, not the states that ratified it.
Right.
That is the huge discrepancy. It makes no sense to me that the Supremacy Clause is justified, because the way it's set up right now, if a state considers a law unconstitutional, who should the arbiter be of that? Who should legally decide that?
The federal Marbury versus Madison, wasn't it the Supreme Court that gave itself that power?
Yep. The federal justice system gets to decide whether, in fact, the federal law is constitutional or not.
Right.
There's no conflict of interest there whatsoever.
Right. None whatsoever.
Well, our checks and balances have been out of balance and out of check for quite some time, and that's not a surprise to anybody, which is why I was kind of surprised that you came on with the position that there is no black privilege, or there is no... There is no white privilege, given, or that black people aren't at a disadvantage in our society, just given the incarceration rates that currently exist.
But again, that's happening. I mean, to stick up for Harry's point, if you look at rural, older white women, the prescription drug and meth hits them the hardest.
True.
Out of any group. So yes. It's, and a lot of that is created by federal policy, federal drug policy. And it just happens to hit the socioeconomic, the lowest rung hardest. There's a great documentary that I always recommend on this, The House I Live In. And check it out on Netflix. It's a great documentary that speaks to that point where, you know, they don't dispute that it's that it hits the black community, hardest, but there it depends on what the drug is. If it's crack, it's the black community. If it's meth, it's the rural white community.
The prosecution level.
If it's marijuana, it's hipsters. So, Greg, continue, please.
Sorry. Oh no, I think though this bill will not be able to be constitutionally overturned. If this goes to the federal courts and it is brought before the Supreme Court, the justification for this has already been called. It's already settled in Prince versus the United States. It's the anti-commandeering principle, which was a ruling in Prince versus the United States. The federal government cannot compel the states to tell them how to use their employees and their officers. So they can sit there and they can say, we passed this law. When we don't have an enforcement agency, good luck. And the justifications are already there, because you have the Colorado marijuana laws. You have the NDAA. You have all these times when there is a federal statute in law, and the states just said, nah, we're good. Nice right. Little law you got there. How are you going to enforce it?
That's so cute.
Yeah. And I really think it's going to make Nikki Haley a rock star. And if you don't know who she is impressive. She's incredibly smart. I think she was Romney's classmate at Harvard Business School. She's a Sikh Indian and a woman.
Nice.
If this works, she is a rock star.
But didn't she almost not run for governor again?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so why would she be a rock star if she doesn't want to hold public office?
Not saying it'll be one of those things she'll be courted, because Romney considered her as VP candidate anyway.
Right, she was vetted, yeah.
There may be something in her background. There's always, you know, everybody's a good candidate until they get vetted, you know.
Any thoughts on this before we move on to the lightning round here? Because we got a time issue here, so we want to speed things up. Any thoughts on nullifying Obamacare other than yay?
I don't necessarily say yay. I mean, it's a mess right now. Mm-hmm. But I think that that's I would just point out that it's not entirely Obama's fault that it is a mess, because it's been rewritten throughout so many processes, through so many people trying to destroy it.
Well, he wanted single payer. So it was, and that was never going to get through. So they did this, and somehow this was acceptable to him and Democrats. I would say
that there was a great deal of compromise involved.
Yeah, and I guess that's part of the problem. I mean, it's the new rates that are going to be coming out, that some of the things that are, you know, it's like they took the broken system and they said, let's just make it worse.
Right. What concerns me is if we completely nullify, we'll go back to the standards that existed prior to Obamacare, and now that everybody has had to change their insurance, when they try to go back with pre-existing conditions, what kind of situation will they be in?
But I'm saying that in a lot of cases, yeah, it's great with the pre-existing conditions and with up to 26, but the policies are so much more expensive. It's
okay when with the conditions of 26. That's can be up to the having someone on your policy until they're 26 years old. That's up to the insurance company. That should be up to them. If they want to have some child on their parents, you know, insurance agency's insurance plan till they're 26, that should be just left up to the insurance company.
Right.
With the pre-existing conditions, man, most people grow up with most people grow up with health insurance. Or when they turn 18, they get health insurance there. I got health insurance when I was 18.
But it's a very real issue for a lot of people. And most, prior to Obamacare, most of the insurance companies that were in operation did observe the 24 years cutoff. My concern is that if we completely nullify all of the progress that the man has made in those two areas, we'll end up in a situation where no one has pre-existing coverage, has a pre-existing policy, because everyone was expected to change or somehow modify in order to comply with Obamacare, and now that is passed, or it becomes nullified, you will have 26-year-olds who weren't on, who have to purchase a separate account, or you will have people with pre-existing conditions who can't get a new policy based upon the fact that there is no Obamacare umbrella to guarantee that they will have a policy waiting for them in the event that the insurance companies refuse to comply with the new terms that Obama was trying to get into operation. And so while he went through a form of, a lot of people called it socialism, there were all kinds of names thrown up about how he tried to federally regulate the health insurance industry. So the way that he went about it did not end up being successful, particularly with all of the qualms that we've had about it here on this show over the months. It was still a valid effort, and in the event that all of his progress is lost, we might find ourselves with a lot of people in really terrible situations.
Greg?
I mean, it's tough for me. I'm going to, as a scumbag Republican, it's probably going to shock you, but for the people with pre-existing conditions, I think it says a lot about you as a society, what you're willing to cover when you didn't win the genetic lottery and when you did.
Right.
So I wrote a blog piece on how I would have changed Obamacare, especially trying to, as much of how I could, view it through a libertarian framework. And unfortunately, right now, the way we view insurance, it isn't insurance. If you have a pre-existing condition, that's not insurance. What we need is a general fund to help people who, in fact, didn't win the genetic lottery, who have a pre-existing condition through no fault of their own, and help them with treatment.
Reason did a video on Samaritan's Purse, which is exactly that sort of mutual aid society, where people are taken care of because a family signs up for $300 a month, and when you have a catastrophic event, or you have a family member who has a pre-existing condition, an ongoing condition, then the mutual aid society gives you the money to cover your bills. And it has nothing to do with the government. It has everything to do with human beings connecting on a human level to take care of each other. And before the modern insurance system, mutual aid societies were very common. And
that's why churches grew a lot at the time. That right. was your community.
Right.
Yes.
So things, I think the Salvation Army, for instance, was a mutual aid society, and that's sort of how it started, to help clothe the poor.
Well, selective members of the poor.
Well,
if you were gay and you showed up at the Salvation Army, you were homeless.
Yeah, but it was also like 1920.
No, I mean, it was like 1990. It was like 1997. Yeah. It was like 2004.
Okay.
I mean, these are cases that are ongoing.
Correct. And the LGBTQ community also started to like protect their own. Like they've got in right. the trans community here in the Midwest, they've got the Couch Share program.
Right. So the concept of the modern insurance system.
It's not just, insurance.
It just doesn't.
Yeah.
It's not a humane system. It's not something that is beneficial to most people. And it's still, even with insurance, if you have a condition, because everything is so expensive because of government interference, it bankrupts you if you have a catastrophic event.
We need everyone to have catastrophic policies. And then if you have the type of condition that continues ongoing care and your income is not high enough to cover it, we need a general fund that will subsidize your care as long as you also have a little bit of skin in the game as well.
Right. Okay,
so you can prevent overuse.
Let's wrap up.
We also have an overcharging system within our healthcare system.
Third-party payment systems.
That video of Samaritan's Purse that I talked about on Reason, they talk about that because they have to pay everything out of pocket, and they are charging their friends and neighbors the money for the bill. They want to give their friends and neighbors, the members of that mutual aid society, the best deal possible. And so they price things out, they negotiate things down, and often they find that we're being charged 3 to 4 times what the hospital really would charge.
It's cost shifting.
Right. Yeah. When my fiance got her back worked on, I've never knew gauze could cost that much.
I know. So, I mean, a stay in a hospital room for 3 nights is $100,000. Yeah. It's the most expensive hotel room in the world. So, all right, let's get up on our soapbox. Harry, at the end of the show, what we like to do is we like to give everyone an opportunity to promote, to discuss something that a point they missed, a topic we didn't get to, or just flat out self-promotion of yourself. What would you like to discuss, or would you like Greg to go first?
I'll go first.
At a man.
Yeah, I would like to plug myself first. I'll do that first.
Please, not in my couch.
We said at the beginning of the show, I'm the co-host of the Independence Bell podcast. You can get to our email at independencebell@gmail.com or hp.independencebell@gmail.com. That one goes directly to me if you think I've said something wrong or you want to know if you are just want to send hate mail. I'll take it. I don't really
maybe care. An autograph. You never know, Harry. Don't sell yourself short.
I just get hate mail through that one. come listen.
I knew I liked you. I get the same thing.
Yeah,
come to our podcast. You know, it's pretty fun. We do get to talk like it's the Christian libertarian versus the atheist conservative sometimes, and we split on a lot of different policies and stuff like that. And the way we just take things, it's a lot of fun. The one point I wanted to go back to was the. When you were, they were talking about like catastrophic care on health insurance, real quick, that I wanted to say. When I turned 18, my health insurance for the last almost 10 years I've been paying the consistent $120 a month, $120 a month. That was my catastrophic health insurance, my dental, and my life insurance policy. $120 to Anthem Blue Cross Blue Shield, and it's been that way since June 2003. I preemptively canceled my policy this June before, because my old policy was going to get probably got canceled next month. And I got luckily I had the job I have and got transferred over. But like that policy, when I first got it, I had a 6 month window to get a physical and get checked out because anything after that 6 month window was considered a pre-existing condition from Anthem. And so when I got it, the only thing I had was going with my knee, which I sprained doing high school wrestling. So, and then when I went to go train, I've always had Anthem, and I've always paid the same amount, whether who's like covered some of it or not. When I went with the catering company, when I transferred from Anthem over to Sigma for like a couple of months, I didn't really like that other company. That went well, but. I traveled when I went from Anthem over to Cigna. I transferred with a letter from Anthem to Cigna that my pre-existing condition was covered over here, and with a good faith over to Cigna, and they covered my pre-existing condition of my knee.
There is I don't even remember what the law is, but it was passed sometime during the Bush era that it is actually illegal for a company to drop you for developing a condition. So let's say you are you have insurance with Anthem, you have a heart attack, they decide that it's too expensive to cover you, so they drop you.
If you're pregnant, if you get pregnant,
because
that's a pre-existing condition,
right,
apparently.
That is actually illegal, and so all of these companies that are dropping people off of their insurance are actually violating the law, and so you can go, this happened, some like guy on Fox News went on and said he got dropped because it was he had a condition, and they were just pushing him onto Obamacare is what they were doing. And so some lawyer found out about it and wrote a letter for him, and it was some HIPAA letter, and sent it to the state attorney general, and he got his insurance back at the same cost. So maybe do a little Googling if you're in that situation. Greg?
Just two quick things. One, the drone strike that killed wedding members in Yemen by the United States government is an absolute atrocity and should be talked about way the hell more than it is right now.
Right.
And two, President Obama, if you are listening, which you're probably not, but one of your NSA listeners is most likely listening, I know you guys ran against each other, but if you want this thing done right, and I know you have a management consultant handling the website right now, but call Mitt Romney. Put away whatever your problems are with Mitt Romney, whatever. That man is as competent as it gets. He is incredibly smart. He does things... He doesn't miss things. That should be your point, man. Put aside your ego and bring him in.
Yeah.
Besides the big dig.
What?
The big dig.
Oh, the big dig
in Boston.
I heard something
totally different. Did too.
Yeah.
My mind went there with
Me
you.
Too. I was like, oh.
All of a sudden, Gina and I were...
Suddenly, we were talking about black issues, weren't we?
Yeah. Everyone, like, in
racism. Right. Racism.
Sorry.
I know what you're talking about.
I have a problem right here. What's your problem? There's no... Never mind.
I mean, yeah, he was encumbered by the union rules, but...
Did you guys hear that they were considering amnesty for Snowden if the leaks stop?
Really?
Yeah.
No.
I bet that plane crashes on the way here.
Well...
Accidents happen.
Mm-hmm.
Gina Baron, I'm with you on the airstrike situation. Also, I think next week, if we get together to chat, we should definitely look into some international news. I know there's things happening in South America. There's things happening in Egypt.
We will try, but Creighton's going to be on. So it's going to be largely dictated by what we can wrangle him into talking.
It's going to be about freedom.
Liberty and anti-liberalism.
All right. Well, I would suggest going a little bit beyond our borders. Like today, we spent a great deal of time talking about how...
Black stuff.
Talking about what you're going to call black stuff and basically debasing education. But other than that, I think that next time we should spend some time focusing on international issues and things that are of a greater global importance.
I don't think we were debasing education.
No.
We were just showing other sources to get your education from.
And that's true. Like, that's true.
Glass house.
Education and experience and what have
credentialism.
You.
Is a crime.
Pot meat kettle, young lady.
Yeah. All right.
Okay, Greg, you had one more thing you wanted to.
Sorry, I only say this because I just thought. You're going to hear this is going to come out this week, and it's going to get picked up, I think, especially on the right. So Barack Obama didn't exactly have an existing long-form birth certificate in Hawaii, right? So they
didn't exactly have one.
No, he didn't. They had to actually create one because it was too old. So the person who is actually the examiner died in a plane crash this week in Honolulu.
Way.
The only person who died on the plane. They crashed in Honolulu, like on a plane, a flight on a small airplane. All seven other survivors, he died. Or she died. I forget if it was a man or woman. But trust me, that'll be on Hannity.
Oh, wow.
Harry, and Donald Trump will be making the rounds.
Harry, I would like you to take a look at this particular document and tell me what you see.
CA, the Certificate of Birth from the Mayor County Health Department.
Nice.
Issued to one...
Christopher... Really? That's your middle name?
That's my middle name.
Read it.
Miles Spangle.
Yes.
So, is there a Canadian somewhere who's going to accidentally crash on a bus on his way to pick up some poutine?
There's no
water.
Somebody
no,
call
no
Sheriff
watermarks.
Joe and his posse.
There's no watermarks.
There's a watermark there.
Barely.
Don't hate. I was named after my great grandfather who's passed away now. Thanks a lot, Harry. You
Peter.
Insensitive bastard.
All
right. My final thought is thank you to co-producer Mittens for snuggling next to me. She is very sweet, and she's the best cat in the world.
I tried to find her a friend this week in chat, and you weren't exactly approving.
Why? Oh, that wasn't a cat. That was a different kind. Never mind.
Gotcha.
All right. Hey, everybody. We'll be here all week. Make sure you go to wal-radio.com and check out Storytime with Gina. Yes. As we delve into the mind of Gina Bear.
We might do a very short one today.
A very, very short one here immediately following this podcast. So we'll see if Greg tries to weasel out of one.
No, I'm here.
All right, good.
I cleared my schedule because I was hoping this would happen.
All right,
we
good.
We only got 20 minutes, so we'll have to make the most of it.
Thank you to all the new people who listen. If you've made it this far, we hope that you'll come back again. What? Ow, ow.
And thanks, Harry, for
Kitty
coming on.
Kitty mittens.
Yep, no problem.
Mittens, get your claws out of my hand.
Kitty mittens.
Ow! Okay, bastard cat. I've been petting her for 5 minutes. She loved it, and then all of a sudden, look, this happens. Nothing happened there. I thought she was going to meow.
She doesn't do tricks for you.
She doesn't meow when I want her to meow. It's like a true cat. Arr, ow. Okay. All right, thank you for joining us. We'll hope to see you next week. Bye-bye.
As always.
Oh, yeah, our tagline. See, it's been a disaster of an episode, and it's not you, Harry, it's me. So next week, we promise
to do better next time.
Music for We Are Libertarians is provided by Hoosier musician Brian Keith Wallen. Please check out his website, briankeithwallen.com. The song is Bad Spell.